T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Getting Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some football, shall we? Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk is at Pro Football Talk on Twitter, also of NBC Sports, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Let's start with the after effects that continue to reverberate from not just the Bears' loss in front of the nation on Sunday night, but how the quarterback switch was handled, what was said, the mess afterward, the fact that Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth are kind of saying, I don't know, here's Chase Daniel, we'll figure out what's going on, and everybody kind of trying to get a story straight here. What was your impression of the whole thing?
Well, my first impression was that Mitch Trubisky was benched, and I have since seen clips that suggest he got hit in the hip, and there's one clip where he's kind of hobbling around. Here's the thing. The Bears only have themselves to blame here, because it's standard practice during a game when someone is injured to make an announcement that there's an injury. Now, I've asked the NFL the specific question as to what is the procedure if a guy gets injured, he continues to play, he gets looked at halftime, because I think that was eventually acknowledged, and he plays in the second half. At some point, is there an obligation to say Mitchell Trubisky has a hip injury, his return is probable, or he will continue to play, or whatever the case may be? Because when he gets yanked out of the game, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, he's got a hip injury, well, when did he get the hip injury? He didn't get it on the play before he left the game. So the transparency that the NFL mandates from the beginning of the game to the end of the game, and there have been teams that have been fined for not properly and quickly enough acknowledging that a player was injured during a game, that's part of this mess. Because if there's an announcement in the second quarter, for example, or at the start of the third quarter that Mitch Trubisky has a hip injury and his return is probable and he keeps playing, if he does exit, it's easier to sell the idea that he had a hip injury.
How much does a failure to follow that protocol affect your opinion of Matt Nagy as head coach? I mean, the buck stops there.
Well, right, and it's not like he's in control of what's being announced during the game. He's got bigger issues to deal with. But all the circumstantial evidence suggests that he's gotten exasperated with Mitchell Trubisky, and maybe this hip injury, even if it is real or just mildly embellished, it was an opportunity to just get him the hell out of the game. You know, sometimes you just need to get the guy the hell out of the game, whether he's injured or not. And if it was embellished or fabricated or whatever the case may be, there's a sweet spot I think Nagy's trying to strike where I got the guy off the field, but I don't want the perception to be that I benched him because I need him next week because my alternative is Chase Daniel. And we saw that he was unable to do anything in the final 3 minutes of the game. Not that he had a fair chance to do anything, but the problem is you want your starting quarterback to still be fully engaged, but you were just driven crazy by we got to get him off the field. And, you know, it's funny that this all was happening on the same day that the Vikings came back from a 20-point deficit, because it was the first time the Vikings came back from down 20 to nothing since the day that Mike Ditka wanted to strangle Jim Harbaugh. So, you know, there's a lot more nuance now than there was in October of 1992, but there's also not nearly the kind of transparency that Ditka would give you when he says after the game, hey, sometimes the player thinks he's smarter than the coach.
Right. Still, though, I want to swing back on the Matt Nagy issue here, because I think you're right. There is a point where a coach just needs to get the guy the hell out of the ballgame. But if it's not within the moment, then it is Nagy's job to set up the systems, the protocols that they're going to follow, if this, if that. That happens prior to the game. It's the same kind of conversation that I would imagine a head coach has with a special teams coordinator when you're deciding which hash mark the kicker wants the ball on. We had an issue with that earlier in the season, the Bears did. Is that stuff that you are willing to give him a pass on, considering the season and the way it's gone?
Well, I guess what I'd say is this. Given the way the season has gone, I'm not surprised that he didn't have pre-engineered the procedures in place to plant the seed for a Mitch Trubisky injury if he's banged up in any way. And I guess it's something they could have done at halftime. Right now, here's the thing. You got 12 minutes at halftime, and you're trying to figure out what you need to do differently to win a football game. But the time to tell the PR staff or whoever would be responsible for communicating to the league representatives at the game that Trubisky has a hip injury, that's the time to do it. And if you want to give yourself, if you're even entertaining at halftime, the possibility of yanking Trubisky, in the moment, you'd like to think that the coach would think to say, let's go ahead and disclose this injury because I may want to yank this guy in the fourth quarter. And it's something that maybe Nagy will think of the next time he's in this predicament. But I guess, you know, look, I've said this before. The worst thing that could have happened to Matt Nagy last year was things went as well as they did and the bar went sky high for this year and they were 12-4 and they didn't have a lot of adversity. And now the adversity has landed on their head with a thud. And he's figuring out on the fly some of the more delicate and difficult nuances of being an NFL head coach.
I was following your stuff very closely on Saturday in real time, and it was important that you had the legal background you did as you were digging into the actual verbiage that was in the fine print of the waiver that Colin Kaepernick was being asked to sign and what essentially he could be signing away and what rights he could be waiving as he last minute said, you know, I'm not going to do this. I can't do this. So it seemed to me like there was some pretty good lawyering going on by Mark Garagos protecting his client from waiving rights he didn't want to waive. Is that the way I read it correctly?
Well, there was good lawyering from the standpoint of preserving Colin Kaepernick's ability to sue the league again for ongoing collusion and or retaliation. And when I practiced law and handled employee rights cases, the second lawsuit would often be much more potent than the first one because the first one, it's kind of vague what the motivation is. And if it's somebody in a protected class, whether it's gender or race or age or whatever, there's typically other people in the workplace that are gainfully employed and they're not feeling any ill effects. So it's harder to prove that motivation. When you get the second lawsuit and your argument is that the company kept this person out or got this person out, because it's not uncommon for somebody to file a lawsuit and remain employed or get their job back as part of the process. And then there's a bias against that person because they have caused a problem and made trouble. It's easier to sell to a jury, a judge, whoever, that something untoward is going on. So there are very viable rights there for Colin Kaepernick. So when you see this waiver that was presented to them last Wednesday, and it's broad enough that if he signs it, you're walking right into a potential argument that you've signed away any potential future claims for collusion or retaliation, you can't let him sign it. Now, with that said, and I've tried to be clear on this, there's blame on both sides here when it comes to whether or not there was a legitimate desire to have a true and meaningful workout. I think both sides were more concerned about posturing for PR and legal purposes, not getting an honest and full workout accomplished, because his lawyers sat on this thing for multiple days before they proffered an alternative. And their alternative was based on the Georgia Tech injury waiver, which was just a two-paragraph thing. What they should have done is they should have said, we need to schedule a half hour where the lawyers get on the phone and try to hash out the language of this waiver, and we're going to redline some of this, we're going to make some changes, we're going to add a paragraph. We want it to be clear that you're not asking him to waive whatever rights he would have for a collusion or retaliation case since February of 2019. That would have been easy to work out, and it would have been easy to get to an impasse, because if that's what they're up to, you smoke them out. They never fully smoked them out, and that's where I have some skepticism that Kaepernick's people weren't serious about this being a real workout, that maybe they wanted to be able to grandstand and walk away from it and do their own thing.
What do you then make of Mark Garagos saying on the Adam Carolla podcast that he expects something within the next 10 days or so? He mentioned two teams and explained the specific circumstances of one owner that doesn't give a crap and another owner that does, but a team trying to salvage his quarterbacking situation. Is this just smoke from Garagos, or do you think there's truth to it?
Mark Garagos is a very accomplished lawyer. I have a ton of respect for him, but I have to call it like I see it. He has squandered his credibility when it comes to making predictions about Colin Kaepernick. After Kaepernick settled his collusion grievance in February, he said he thinks that in the next couple weeks there will be someone who signs Colin Kaepernick and does the right thing. Back in May of 2018, he promised this major development that someone was going to dime out the NFL, and it never happened. In June of 2018, he promised some major development in the case, and it never happened, unless he was predicting the settlement 7 months in advance. So the prognostication skills of Mark Garagus are questionable at best. Now, we wrote an item about it because it's newsworthy when the guy's out there saying it. But, oh, there was another time, too, he said he hinted that the Raiders and the Patriots were interested in Kaepernick. I mean, it's never happened. 32 months have gone by. Nothing last week changed the situation where, you know, any team could bring him in at any time for a workout. If the Bears want to see what he can do, they can bring him in. Pete Carroll said, we were real curious to see what he did at that workout. It's a shame our scout couldn't go to the other location. Hey, Pete, if you're curious, you can bring him in. You can bring him in today. You had him for a visit and you didn't work him out. If you're curious, there's a way to get your curiosity satisfied. And so I just don't think anything's going to change, and I don't think anybody's going to sign him, and I think that this is going to die down. And I still, you know, of all the unforced errors the league office has made over the years, this is the weirdest one, because why would you drop this thing in the middle of a punch bowl in the weeks as the playoff push begins during your 100th season? It created a major distraction that no one wanted and no one needed, and the league's the one that got the ball rolling.
He's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk on Twitter, telling some pretty honest truths about the Kaepernick workout situation. Appreciate the lawyerly side of things, too, because I think a lot of people had kind of missed that little angle, and it means a lot. Posturing matters in this. When it comes to lawyering, though, I wonder what you think about how the NFL has handled the fallout from the Browns and Steelers altercation not that long ago. Should there have been bigger precedents set for people who didn't swing a helmet around?
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem. We've never seen this before. It crosses a line that should never be crossed. Getting hit in the head with your own helmet is one of the risks that you never assume when you walk onto a football field. And he could have seriously injured Mason Rudolph. He could have fractured his skull. He could have killed him. You know, one of the things you learn in law school is you take your victim as your victim arrives. And if you just punch someone in the face and they have a glass jaw and you kill them, you're responsible for manslaughter. So when you take a 6-pound helmet and you swing it like a windmill and you're a 6'7", 275-pound guy, you're potentially going to kill someone or at a minimum seriously injure them. Myles Garrett was lucky, from the standpoint of civil and criminal liability, that he didn't injure Mason Rudolph. But from the league's perspective, they have to impose a punishment that will ensure that no one will do this again. You know, you've had coaches say, well, I've never told guys not to swing a helmet and hit somebody in the head because you assume you don't have to do it. Well, maybe you do. And now the league sends that message to anyone who's ever going to play football at any level. Mm-hmm. If you do this, if you blow that fuse and give in to the temptation to do something that serious, we are going to come down on you, because it's essentially Russian roulette at that point. And every time you swing that helmet, it's like pulling that trigger and hoping the chamber's empty. And they got lucky Thursday night, but the next time they may not get so lucky. And that's why they got to come down on him. And that I think they were easy on him. And, you know, he's appealing his indefinite suspension by arguing that the CBA doesn't permit an indefinite suspension for on-field misconduct. Well, if the league gets another crack at this, Myles Garrett may be, you know, regretful that he wished for that opportunity, because the NFL may say, okay, fine, it's 12 games, it's 16 games, it's a calendar year, whatever the case may be. And I could get behind that, because you cannot have a guy swinging a helmet.
I wish I bought into believing the deterrent effect of it. And I understand from a legal perspective, you have to show that it's on record. You need the precedent. You need the case law for potential deterrence. But from my experience with these things, whether it's a little skirmish at a practice, these are big, powerful men that go into some sort of mental fugue state when they play that could in large part be argued as temporary insanity. I mean, maybe somebody is just non compos mentis in the moment in a football fight.
Well, it's better to be walking around naked in a grocery store if you're going to go into a fugue state than to swing a helmet and hit somebody in the head with it, right?
I've always said that, Mike.
And the next time we get on the calendar, the post-scouting combine conversations about all the goofy questions that these guys get asked. And there are plenty of questions that are improper and illegal. But one of the things they do when there's a chance to talk to the incoming class of potential rookies, You want to see what it takes to get under their skin. You want to see what they do when you get under their skin. That's part of screening out which guys are going to blow a fuse at the wrong time and which guys aren't. Now, they're more concerned about a 15-yard penalty
than they are
swinging a helmet and hitting someone on the head.
Yeah, they fire those questions, though. You know, it's like, you know, your mother a whore and your father was a hamster and smelled elderberries. Yeah.
I said there are plenty of inappropriate and illegal ones.
Yeah.
But the questions that aren't inappropriate, that aren't illegal, that are the tactics. You know, you just sit there and stare at the guy. I mean, you want to see where is this guy's limit and can he control the switch? And it's tough because you've got to have the switch on between the snap and the whistle, but you also have to know when to turn it off. And that said, even between the snap and the whistle, you're not going to rip somebody's helmet off and hit him over the head with it. I mean, this was beyond anything we've ever seen, but it requires a punishment beyond anything we've ever seen.
I get the practice at the combine. I still think Parcells dropping a gun underneath the table like Nicholson in The Departed is a little much, but I get ownership and coaches wanting to find out what makes these guys tick.
I never heard about that one. Parcells dropped a gun under the table?
I mean, I feel like he'd be the guy to do it,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
I mean, like he'd be, you know, that's the kind of practice that I assume went on in the 80s.
Well, and you can only imagine the stuff they did. But look, and that's the other thing, too. Football's so much more different than it was in the 80s. This is the first serious act of in-game misconduct that we've seen since the NFL got its epiphany about player health and safety. And the other side of this is that image played all day Friday, on the morning shows, on the nightly news. Mom and Dad saw that, and the NFL better make sure that Mom and Dad realize that when they let little Jimmy and Joey or Jenny go play football, that's not part of playing football. So there needs to be that kind of punishment that resonates and sends that message. You're not setting your kid up to get hit in the head with his or her own helmet.
Yeah, was it Andre Garrod?
That was the Albert Haynesworth.
Yes.
He stomped on his forehead. He got 5 games for that. Pulled his helmet off and stomped on his forehead. But again, look, it was an ugly visual. It was pre-concussion epiphany. But I still think swinging a helmet and hitting a guy on the top of the head with it is worse because of what it could do to the wrong guy.
Yes. Mike, great stuff. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Hub is going to join us at 11 with more stuff specifically on the Bears and what's going to go on at Hallis Hall today. We plan to carry Matt Nagy at 11:45. As soon as he gets to the lectern, we will flip that switch for you, our switch. And coming up in just a moment, I think we need to pull some threads together here because of how we began the show regarding the significance of a quarterback decision today. What we're talking about with Brad Biggs, maybe getting a little birdie telling him something about Jesper Horsted. Let's look at this sort of all together and what we're saying about what is starting with Act 3 here of the 2019 Bears season.
Hopefully it's a sense of accountability. We'll try and pull that together for the Bears when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
This segment's brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner. 30 million people come down with the flu every year. It could be you or your family. The best way to tell if it's a cold or the flu is by taking your temperature, and no one does that better than the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Bernstein and McKnight, we are on Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon, and we've been very football intensive, very Bears heavy, because we're trying to just sort of kind of close the book on that game and what happened in that game while moving on to what is next. And it's sort of one of these times to refocus. How do the Bears now get closer to winning the Super Bowl? How do they get closer to winning the Super Bowl when it's not necessarily about winning this year? I know that Matt Nagy is going to try to just get a win. Do whatever I can do to get a win. However, it's Ryan Pace's job to also use what he can do with the roster to influence some of this decision-making and prove that they think collaboratively, because the goal is obviously everybody wants to win the Super Bowl. Let's revisit some things outside of just what's going on at quarterback. They made the decision before training camp opened to take a Pro Bowl center in Cody Whitehair and make him their left guard.
Yeah.
And moving James Daniels, the second-year player, who is a high second-round pick, who is believed to be a natural at the center position.
Really well thought of.
And put him there. It didn't work.
It did not.
However, it was far too late that they made the switch back. Their admission that it didn't work was after the fact.
Well, why did they do it, right?
Why did they do it in the first place?
Yeah, why did they do it in the first place? Why did they make the switch in the first place to move Daniels, to flop Whitehair back to center? Because of a familiarity with the quarterback, right? Because of an understanding, it seems, that Whitehair is just kind of better at reading what the defense has got for you, which is something that Mitch has struggled with and something that Daniels had struggled with.
Mitch, in an effort to try to salvage Mitch or make his life as easy as possible to maximize what he can do, I think they just wanted to make him more comfortable. And or, we don't know, maybe they've reevaluated the ceiling for Daniels at the center position. But the question is, now, are you closer to a Super Bowl by switching it back? Are you better off saying, do what you have to do, learn how to block, learn how to get out of your stance, learn how to do all this stuff? Is this something you now reverse again? Because it all seemed kind of silly that out of desperation,
yeah,
rather than out of long-term planning, it was purely out of desperation, like, yeah, well, we're going to switch that back.
You're back to evaluating players that were win-now guys. That's where the season has taken you, correct? You are now back to making evaluations on second-round picks, on potential Pro Bowlers, actual Pro Bowlers,
yeah,
and going, okay, well, now we need to use the rest of the season to evaluate just how good they really are. That's how much the rest of this has all fallen off. And certainly some of it is because of a real lack of quarterback play and productivity.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've got questions asked about guys like Anthony Miller, too. Guy that you went up to draft. So let's widen the conversation then to the wideouts themselves. Anthony Miller's coming off a game where, fundamentally speaking, he helped cause an interception. He then started jawing and got a taunting penalty. He has done that before in his production. While I understand that I don't know that there's a guy that Mitch missed on open seam routes more than Anthony Miller last year, both before and after the injury, but his production's not been great. You spent a fourth-round pick on Riley Ridley. Javon Wims has caught footballs when they've been thrown to him. You have other options at wide receiver. And while they, you know, probably have their struggles, I don't know if, you know, Ridley has the splits figured out and an understanding of
I don't know if Miller does
how to play each one of the positions. But, right, I don't know that Miller does either. You've got an opportunity here to, I know accountability is a buzzword in sports, but you've got a dude who wasn't pulling on the rope in the same direction as everybody else in the offense. You've got an opportunity then to, if not, you know, deactivate him for a game or what have you, change the snap counts, change the usage, figure out what you have in other spots.
And you use the A word, accountability. You're keeping your kicker here now because it doesn't matter, right?
I think so.
I think we're all reading it correctly, because that seems to be the obvious read, is that if they're 6-4 instead of 4-6, there's a new kicker here.
I think you're right. The only thing that gives me pause there is something that Patrick Manley told
us on Monday.
And ironically,
they could be 6-4 instead of 4-6 if they had a kicker.
If they had a kicker, right, they'd be fine. Or at least alive. But it's because of something Patrick Manley told us on Monday that I'm not sure I 100% agree with that. If it's true that the best two kickers out there, like he told us, are Cody Parkey and Matt Bryant, maybe that's not the case, because you know you can't bring Cody Parkey back here. And maybe Bryant is the guy that you do bring back despite his age and being out of football for a little bit. But those are tough decisions to have to make, too.
But this, again, is part of the question. Are you going to go through the kicker thing again next year, regardless of how good you think you're going to be? At some point, you have to start looking at using all the available time and opportunity you have. What if you get – are you closer to winning a Super Bowl if by the end of the season, if you can get to the end of 2019 schedule and feel better about the kicker?
I suppose.
That's your job.
Yeah, I suppose you are.
You interestingly can't punt away this time for your kicker because it's your responsibility to solidify these things. You can do all of it while you're trying to win games. They're not at cross purposes.
No, it's just what you have to do then is give those opportunities to those players in spite of potentially winning games. If Matt Nagy truly feels that the better offensive line right now for this situation, because Mitch is Mitch, that it's got to be Cody Whitehair under center, then you're forfeiting what may be laying down a bit more foundation for 2020, for 2021, just so you can squeak out a 3 or 5 point win against the Giants.
They have a responsibility now to have difficult conversations that we're having for them right here. And I like to think that they're not just going about business as usual because they're not mathematically eliminated, and understanding that maybe Nick Kwiatkowski is playing his way into a bigger role on the next good Bears team.
Maybe.
Maybe not having Danny Trevathan is allowing you to see if maybe he's better than you think he is. What do you have in Joel Igbunwe? What's there? What do you want to do with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix next year? And is there something else? Is it time to see more Deion Bush to make some of these decisions?
Because Clinton Dix is on the one-year deal, and you've got to make a decision on that regardless. Yep. Why not have the option, the in-house option, assessed as well?
Yeah, coming out of training camp, he was meriting time on the field that he's out there when Aaron Rodgers completes the big
your,
pass.
He was your big nickel guy, right? Or your big dime guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to do some of that stuff. I don't know that they're ready to. That's why today, like you called it Act 3, right? This whole today is kind of, well,
Scene 1, Act 3.
Scene 1, Act 3 is kind of this idea of that last game against the Rams setting you now on a completely different course. That's why, you know, the start of the conversation today from Matt Nagy, when he gets up there and talks to reporters, feels as big as it is. Even if he does give you the, we're dealing with it. We're working through. We're figuring it out. If it's anything other than it's a hip pointer and Mitch is going to be our guy if he's healthy to go, which I guess he's kind of been there on Monday, this feels different. I mean, this is a different task for the Bears as they've, you know, kind of put themselves together seeking a Super Bowl at the beginning of the year, just a couple of months ago.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. The Cats host Minnesota this Saturday, the season's final game at Ryan Field. Buy tickets now at nusports.com. We have the Midday Midway coming up next. I always enjoy asking the question, presenting something to you, and then saying, is this irony? So I'm going to do that.
Perfect.
I'm going to do that. And I also have a possible Thanksgiving menu item that is being pushed out by a major fast food company, complete with recipe. And I urge you to keep an open mind on this because I read through it. I'm uncertain, but at least half of the I'm Fat podcast is going to weigh in. And a professional chef happens to be here today. So we're in Christopher Dickens. So we're going to find out. We're going to get amateur and professional and other opinions on something that sounds interesting.
It's out there. All right, fair enough. We're going to go to, you know how much I love local news and bringing you the stupid local news from other places.
Yes.
I have local news meets local idiot, and I could not be happier about it. The Midday Midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
The Midday Midway is brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. Discussed the significance of today for the Chicago Bears and what it means of how they set the agenda moving into this point of the season involving the quarterback and the kicker and other positions. And
Every other position on the offense.
They're figuring out sort of what they're doing and why they're doing it. We also played the Mark Garagos sound, talking about the Colin Kaepernick and the two teams that he believes are interested. Mike Florio kind of called BS on that and said he's got zero credibility when it comes to predictions for his client. It was a lively session with Mike Florio today, talking about Myles Garrett, too.
And I was glad that Mike pointed out some of the disappointments he has, and then that I think you and I both have, at least I have, with the way the workout went, not necessarily what was needed from the Kaepernick camp, but just the way things were negotiated and how they could have been done a little bit better. You know how much I love local news, and I love stories of local idiots even more. When the two of them come together, we have Nirvana, I think. I think that's how you achieve it. The Cincinnati Bengals are a very, very bad football team, and remaining on their schedule in order are Pittsburgh, the New York Jets, Cleveland, New England, Miami, and then Cleveland again. Okay, so potentially some wins there. One local man in Cleveland has made a poor bet, and is now stranded outside for the foreseeable future. I take you to the fine folks at WSTR Cincy.
But with another Bengals loss, Jeff Lanham will be spending at least another week camping out on his restaurant's roof.
It's crazy, I know. And I'm stuck in it, and I can't get out of it now. Like, I'm stuck.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no way out.
It began jokingly as a bar bet.
My wife was ignoring me, and I'm like, I'll pull a Wild Man Walker.
If the Bengals, then 0-5, lose to the Arizona Cardinals, Lanham would sleep on the roof until they win. The Bengals, now 0-9, and Lanham is keeping his word.
It's so boring, man. That's probably it. It's like you get bored to death. During the day, you can't do nothing, can't go nowhere. You just sit here.
Before Sunday's game against Baltimore, Lanham's wife and friends tailgate while Jeff watches from his tent.
Every Sunday, I've always said, you know, I've never, like, prayed to win a game just because I know there's far more important things to pray for. But, you know, the last couple of weeks I'm praying, you know, like, please let us win so Jeff can come down.
After a month, the tent is becoming home. He's got shelves of keepsakes, snacks, and a 50-inch TV. While he's got it all in this outdoor man cave, so to speak, he says one thing is missing.
I hate not being around my family. That's probably the worst part, not being around the family, like stuff like that. But I'm going to stick with my word, and eventually they have to win.
And that could still be a few weeks, as the upcoming schedule isn't exactly kind for Cincinnati.
Home.
Thank God he didn't bet his firstborn.
Right. It's crazy,
I mean,
I know. And I'm stuck in it, and I can't get out of it.
Yes,
now,
you can.
Like, I'm stuck.
Leave.
There's no way out.
The moment, and I can't get out.
There are many ways out. There are at least four. There's that side, and that side, and the other two sides of the roof. Just come down.
My wife was ignoring me, and I'm like, I'll pull a Wild Man Walker.
I don't know.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Wild Man Walker was a fan in the 90s in Cincinnati who, same thing, did it, but did it on a billboard.
Cincinnati is such a terrible football town that he's not the first guy to do this.
Right, he's referencing
abandoned his family for the roof.
One of my favorite things is the wife, like, just being like, God, please, just let him win.
I'm actually praying again. I'm crying. That's what I'm doing.
It's so boring, man.
So a few weeks ago, I gave you the story of the New York subway station that had to be shut down because of a suspicious package.
Right.
It turns out the suspicious package was a delivered new call box to be placed there to be used to report suspicious packages. And our judges decided, yes.
Oh, yes.
That was irony. Now, I ask you the same. Is this irony? Deputies in Wake County responded to a shooting range about 20 miles southwest of Raleigh, saying that a sheriff's officer had shot himself while reholstering his gun. He was taken to a hospital with injuries that weren't considered life-threatening, and this was a center that was built by the county for citizens, hunters, law enforcement officers, and others to safely practice target shooting. This particular sheriff's officer was a firearms safety instructor.
Oh, man.
I ask you, when the firearms safety instructor shoots himself in the leg, reholstering his gun, is it irony?
Wild.
Bam! Just like that. Yeah. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. A winner.
Yeah, I think that's a sure shot. That is absolutely irony.
Add rock, come and rock the sure shot.
You see Carmelo Anthony's got a new basketball team?
I do.
He's got himself signed to the Blazers.
Made a long three-pointer last night.
Yeah.
Then kind of missed every other shot.
Good for Melo. He's going to take a lot more long three-pointers, mm-hmm. I think. I'm just gonna read this. Rick sent this to me, and I find it fascinating. Melo posted on Instagram about his new number. He's wearing 00. And he wrote in the Instagram post why he's wearing 00. And he's got a bulleted list of the reasons why. I will just read them to you, and you can tell me if we're worried about Carmelo Anthony.
I'm listening.
A number greater than any assignable quantity or countable. This is how it's written.
Okay.
Number, symbol, infinity symbol.
Nah.
Without end. Process that never stops. Can never be given an exact value.
Okay.
Simplicity and balance. The mysticism of our past and the possibility for an eternal future give the infinity symbol a sense of awe and wonder.
You're a loony.
Infinite nature of God, 7. That's what it says. We cannot stay away from God without him trying to bring us back to him. Okay. The chance to have a new and great beginning with the past left behind where it belongs.
Like Kabbalistic numerology.
Beginnings or end, Alpha and Omega.
I think he started writing fortune cookies and just like put all their fortunes and just put them up there.
The write-up on it follows.
I like the fact that it's that over the top.
I mean, this is committing to the bit.
Yeah, that's the thing.
This is like Johnny C. McGinley, man. This is committing to the bit. One should be concentrating on clues that the universe is dropping for them to take up a quick reaction. Divine power is seeking my undivided attention. I had to achieve the tranquility of spiritual maturity through the guidance of the universe. I will always be serenity now. Like, that's what I expect him to say next.
Does he think that 00 is the infinity symbol? 1?
No, probably not. I probably know the infinity symbol is a sideways 8.
I would think so.
Also, can you think of another team that's had a 0 and a 00 on it?
No.
They have that Lillard guy who's pretty good.
Yeah, he's not bad, Eddie.
Huh? Yeah.
So like a roulette wheel. Okay, just hear this out before you judge.
All right.
Hear it out, okay? This is from CNN. Taco Bell headquarters hosts an annual Friendsgiving dinner for its employees where every dish features an innovative Taco Bell spin. And now they want you to try blended rolled chicken taco bisque.
Interesting.
You ready for the recipe?
Yeah.
Okay. So the recipe's out. There's pictures and everything. You need to hit up Taco Bell for the rolled chicken taco party pack. It's six rolled chicken tacos, 6 crunchy tacos.
That's Jason Woski's favorite.
Garlic, onion, broth, heavy whipping cream, and cilantro.
Whoa.
They recommend a cast iron stock pot. Saute the onion and garlic. Add a few more items. Simmer until it becomes aromatic. Then take 4 rolled chicken tacos, quartered, and plop them into the soup mixture.
Just straight up and in.
Reduce the heat and simmer for 10 minutes. You will then take the soup and blend it. You can use a stick blender or you can throw it in the blender. The stick blender.
Yeah, the immersion blender. I got one of those.
With a cup of heavy whipping cream until it becomes a creamy bisque. Now, it's technically, obviously, not a bisque.
It is not?
It's a fake, because a
pseudo bisque?
It's a cream-based soup.
It's a cream-based soup. It's not a bisque. A bisque involves a roux, right? It usually starts with butter and...
Roux, and then you have to kind of like make a broth, actually, and all sorts of stuff. You're not making a rolled chicken taco broth out of this.
Right. It's not like a consommé that's then going in.
A roux.
So that's pretty much it. You can garnish with a little bit of extra cilantro. I think there's enough in there. If you're already going with like chicken stock and the cream, in my experience, it's pretty hard to screw up something that it's going to be a salt level thing. And if you manage all that Connor's properly, I'm down.
I gotta
for
watch my salt.
I'm in.
It almost seems like a chopped basket where it's like cilantro and like 2 of the other things and Taco Bell rolled chicken tacos.
Right. Well, we do that. Chopped is really cool. I mean, we sort of play along at home. The kids have gotten really good at it. They're like, oh yeah, they're great at it. We used to do it.
You do the baskets and stuff, with the random.
Theoretically, we would do. I used to do it for them when they were little. Instead of bedtime stories, we would do theoretical Chopped, where I would present a basket and then I would leave the room.
Yeah,
and they would each present, and I would declare a winner of each round.
See, I've been playing from age 24 to I would say 29. I've been playing the poor man's version of Chopped for my entire life, and not knowing it.
Yeah.
It's just like single man opens fridge, identifies ingredients, and makes something.
No, we use that as a specific repurposed verb. If I can't get to the store, or if he's just home from hockey, I'm like, look, you're gonna have to chop it. You have to make a basket. and he'll go down to the fridge. Like, would you have any Omaha steaks, something left over from a thing? Like,
probably.
Check the chest freezer, and they're pretty good. They come up with some really cool stuff.
It's pretty good. It's good skill.
But I'm down for this soup.
You want to make it?
Yeah, why not?
You gonna make it for like a leftovers or something?
I have a consistency issue, how it had mouthfeel type of thing, because you're blending a taco.
So, but it's softened. If it's going to simmer for 10 minutes, the taco's going to come apart.
Yeah, but I just feel like I'm going to get like a chunk of soggy tortilla.
We'll find out. I'll make it.
All right, let's make it.
There's a cast iron in the show kitchen.
Lord knows Shane's got a ton of heavy cream somewhere in his office. I just assume he always has buckets of heavy cream in his office.
And we're burying the lead here. Shane Reardon is buying a quarter cow. Did you hear this?
Yeah, I think it's a bad idea to buy a quarter cow. He thinks he's going to breed it is the issue.
No, he's buying a quarter cow.
Like one of those cows outside the convenience store that you put a quarter in and you ride the cow? Shane has it in his apartment.
I might have misinterpreted what he said then.
Hub Arkish is coming up in just a couple. That is the Midday Midway. Yeah, and like Dan, it. I got to tell you what.
Yes.
When we come back.
Yes.
Breaking Bears news that will thrill the Bernstein and McKnight listener.
I knew
breaking it. Breaking news.
I know what it is.
That will thrill you.
Yes.
I promise you are going to love to hear this. That's next. Bernstein McKnight on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.